This is Too Political, the podcast in which two old friends talk about politics, the news, and whatever else we think of. My name's Arthur.
And this is Jason.
And together we're Too Political. Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Too Political, Episode 2 for March 12th, 2009. And joining me, of course, is, as ever, my lovely co-host, Jason.
Lovely co-host, Jason.
Oh, I don't know. They say that on TV.
I'm in a squirrely mood. Hello from Washington. So yes. Well, before we get started, I have really some extremely important news. This is something I'm going to try and convey every single time we have a podcast, because this is, I think, breaking news that everyone should know about.
Breaking news.
I'm like CNN, you know, breaking news at 9 o'clock in the morning and breaking news at 6 p.m. in the evening. It's the same story. And I have to say, I had something that I thought was just really wonderful, but I'm disappointed, and I'm disappointed for all of our listeners, because I was going to wish everyone a happy Jousting the Bear Day, which was on the 10th. Especially all our listeners in Pistoia, Italy. And then I found very late in the day it was World Kidney Day, and I couldn't celebrate that. So I had to settle by going to a Fleetwood Mac concert. You know, it's just really disappointing. They were unbelievably wonderful and incredible, but, you know, I just soldiered through it, you know, and just, you know, they just ended it exactly the way I'd hoped they had. But, you know, it's at great personal sacrifice on my part. But there are two important things that everyone should know about. And March 16th we wish everyone a happy Freedom of Information Day. And then, of course, March 17th is the incredibly important day. It is the Chahar Saben Sori, or Sori, I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce the last name, which is the fire festival in Iran. And let me tell you, last year in my neighborhood, pardon the pun, we had a huge blowout, just a huge blowout celebrating the fire festival. I mean, just picking up stuff for days afterwards, you know, and I didn't go to work the next day. It was just, you know, and so... I'm really looking forward to that on the 17th. So anyway,
you realize that's making fun of an Iranian holiday that Ahmadinejad is probably going to demand that we apologize.
I'm not making fun of an Iranian holiday. We celebrated that here. You know.
Okay then.
And I think there's some other day about some celebration with, it's either a Scottish or Welsh saint or something. he drove out the ferrets from someplace. So there.
And that sound is all the Irish listeners unsubscribing.
Yes. Well, you know, maybe that German Pope guy will do something to me.
Yeah. Whatever.
So there's, and I'm going to try every single time we have a podcast to impart this very important information. There will be links on our site so that people can find out more about Freedom of Information Day, which is actually kind of a serious type thing, and for the Iranian Fire Festival, if you need to know more. So anyway, I'm done now. Back to you. Back to you, Chet.
Yeah, David. you realize that probably a good chunk of the listeners have no idea what we're talking about.
You know... It's probably true most of what we say, so...
Well, that's a good point. Mind you, sometimes I don't know what I'm saying either, so I just don't know anybody else should know more than I do about that.
I don't know why I used the modifier, but anyway.
Well, the first episode, of course, was finally posted to both amrinspodcast.com, my original feed, and also to the new site, and it is now available for subscription through iTunes. You can do a search with Too Political, one word, but with two as the number, and it will take you to it, or you can just go to toopolitical.com and click on the Subscribe with iTunes button if you so desire. Otherwise, it will continue to be available through Amrin's Podcast for, well, a while anyway. I'll certainly give it plenty of advance notice when that's about to end. So that's a little business out of the way. But our last episode actually got some feedback already. And
yay! Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So I thought that we would start by playing a voicemail that we received from Chef Mark.
Hi, Arthur. Hi, Jason. This is Chef Mark in New York City. I'm out enjoying a beautifully warm day, which is the sudden onset of spring, and let's hope it stays, with Steva, and listening to your two political casts. I'm listening to them whether they're on Amarin's or on, you know, your own feed. So way to go. The one feedback I have on all of them, but especially this last one, is while I think you guys have some really great ideas and some really good, really valid criticism, unfortunately you're framing so much of it in the old dialectic of us versus them, you know, the old Democrat-Republican divide. And, you know, obviously that's what Republicans do. So you're responding to a lot of that. I just feel like it would be really wonderful if you would take it out of that context and frame it just purely on the ideas themselves or on the hypocrisies and not about, oh, but the Republicans say this, but the Democrats do this. Because, you know, unfortunately, it just gets kind of tiresome from both sides. And the problem of that is that it's just all about entrenchment into us versus them. And really, honestly, the ideas kind of get lost. In particular, you know, you found yourself painted into a corner because you ended up defending earmarks, which is absurd. But of course, you had to do it because you were talking about how crazy it was that someone like John McCain would be holding Obama to task on it when Republicans are so guilty of it. But see, you wouldn't have that problem if you weren't defending Democrats, but rather, criticizing hypocrisy. So anyway, that's just a minor criticism. I really love listening to you guys. It's great. It would be really cool once in a while to get people of differing viewpoints on there. So anyway, keep up the good work. Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for that phone message, Mark. Definitely appreciate it. Mark is a really good guy. He's helped me a lot with some of the behind-the-scenes things over the years, especially with videos in particular. He is the host of Remarkably Mark, personal journal podcast, and he also does Remarkable Palette, part of the Culinary Media Network. Does some really interesting stuff, including one about New Zealand wine, not that I'm biased or anything, but I thought that one was particularly good. But Mark raised some points that I certainly think are worth addressing. And the first is about the looking at the divide between Republican and Democrat. And I think that when you're talking about U.S. politics, actually politics in general, it's sort of automatic that you'll be talking about things in terms of a divide because Congress is made up of Republicans and Democrats. Actually, in other multi-party democracies like New Zealand even, there's still a divide because there's government and opposition. And right. So there is a built-in divide. And of course, I'm a Democrat, so I tend to lean in favor of the Democrats anyway and liberals in general. Because that's my ideology, and I've always been very upfront about that, so everybody knows where I'm coming from. And in future episodes, we're going to be talking about issues that don't necessarily relate to the partisan divide. That's inevitable, and we also at some stage hope to be looking at the whole topic of polarization and things that have been going on in the political sphere. But when it comes down to earmarks, which is the other thing that Mark was talking about in particular, it wasn't so much that we were trying to ignore what the Democrats were doing in order to ridicule the Republicans, although that was the main point of it. We were trying to point out that Republicans were being hypocrites over this whole earmarks thing. I mean, there was something like 17 senators who got up and pounded the podium about earmarks, and all 17 of them had earmarks in the omnibus spending bill. And 40% of the earmarks were from Republicans. So it wasn't that we were attacking Republicans per se over earmarks, just pointing out they were being hypocritical in attacking them when they, in fact, were part of the earmark process.
Right.
So that's basically what I wanted to say.
Yeah. Well, and I sort of want to raise the question in general about earmarks and how all of a sudden this has become the big, you know, terrible, awful thing, and how sort of the general thing of what it seems that all the earmarks we sort of hear about are these, you know, things that are sort of laughable. The $1.2 million on researching the smell of swine. You know, this is as in pork or pig farms or whatever. And I just started thinking about, well, what what are these 8,000 things? What are they? What do they represent? What are these projects? Are they as, you know, are they as frivolous and sort of silly as sort of all of the people who are against them, who've cherry-picked from this list to show to us what these actually are? And I did a little some research, and I went to a site called Taxpayers for Common Sense, and there'll be a link in the show notes about it, and got and found this Excel spreadsheet which lists all the earmarks. It's 86 pages long, and I tried to print one of the pages, and it's in little, itty bitty, teeny tiny, tiny, teeny, teeny, teeny tiny, very small type. And like really small type. So anyway, did some stuff so I could actually read it, and I decided we would I would take where we both grew up in the state of Illinois, and so that I would take the list from the state of Illinois. And there are about 280 or so earmarks from the state of Illinois. That's at least what I think I sort of counted that. And I started looking at some of them, and I'm just going to comment on, I'm just going to, you know, read what it is, and I'm just, and then I'll comment on it. There's $280,000 for the City of Chicago Heights water and sewer improvements. Sort of a similar thing for $300,000 for the City of Lexington for wastewater treatment system improvements. There's a little over $2 million for the National Center for Food Safety and Technology in Illinois, which in light of the recent problems we've had with peanuts might be a good investment. There's $237,500 for the City of Kankakee, Illinois, for the purchase, renovation, and conversion of houses that are in foreclosure, abandoned, in disrepair to affordable use properties. And then there's $380,000 for the Austin Chamber of Commerce Business Development and Resource Center in Chicago, Illinois, for the development of at least 80 units of senior housing. Now,
I should point out, just for the benefit of listeners who don't know, Austin is a neighborhood in the city of Chicago, which is an historic district for the most part. It has been rehabilitated a lot over the years, and the general gentrification has at various times affected adversely poor and the elderly.
And so I guess, you know, here, these seem to me to be very reasonable things. That seems to all of them are there. Infrastructure things. If you're developing at least 80 units of senior housing, that, I mean, it doesn't sound like they're building it, but they might be doing something where they're involved with this. Certainly the purchase, renovation, and conversion of houses that are in foreclosure or abandoned, that's, you know, city blight. That is certainly something that is extremely important in sort of the crisis that we're facing. So I guess my question is these are terrible, awful, and bad things. Really? Again, I'm not an advocate for earmarks or totally against earmarks. I'm wondering how they became this what is essentially this terrible, awful thing. And I don't think the news media has done a very good job in explaining why this is such a terrible and awful thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't recall ever sort of all of the stuff that's been associated. Well, it's these pork projects. And, you know, even when they talked about Obama signing the bill tonight on ABC News, it's like, oh, with all their special projects and pork. Well, I don't know about you, but this seems to me to be exactly what government should be doing.
Yeah, looking after the people.
Right. And again, is it, I'm asking this question, I'm not advocating either, I'm just asking this question, is it because they're slipped in at the last minute? Is it because maybe some of these things are to private companies and there are no bid contracts, or there's sort of no hearings or talking about this? But it really does seem to me that this is sort of the essence of what elected representatives are supposed to respond to their constituents. And I sort of have, you know, and when does this type of an earmark become a bad thing? And a perfect example, happened this Friday, last Friday I was home, and all of a sudden on the street where I live, there are speed humps. And this is a fairly well-traveled street. and people were going really, really fast. And I have to assume that the D.C. Department of Transportation didn't get out a map of D.C. and take a dart and just throw it and go, oh, let's put speed humps on that street. I have to assume that people who lived in the area said, hey, we need some help with this because people are just driving way too fast in this area. So here's my question. Is not doing that responding to constituents' needs and aren't doing some of these things? Now, again, I cherry-picked a bunch of stuff, and I'm sure, you know, because other people have cherry-picked all of the projects that are going to gain, you know, sort of stir people up. But most of these things seem to me to be fairly reasonable things. And again, so my question is this become the big, terrible, awful thing because of the way or the process in which they are done? And also sort of stepping back a little ways and looking at it again, this big to-do over this, this was a $410 billion budget bill, which in comparison to the way we've been spending money lately seems very small, like really small, $410 billion. What is that? And they're talking about $8 billion, which is 2% of that budget. So that means there's no waste or pork or misappropriate or misspending of fund in the remaining $402 billion. I'm sorry, I find that really hard to believe.
Well, I think that there's a couple things going on here. One is that the right generally believes that government does nothing well. That's what the old diehard right-winger Phil Crane always used to say, and that it shouldn't do anything beyond certain core functions, defense, for instance, maybe certain regulation here and there, although very, very little of that. And so that position, that government does nothing well and it shouldn't be in the business of funding local projects, is irreconcilable with those who think that government does do some things well and should do certain things. So right. Those people you have to kind of put to one side because you're never going to come to any sort of agreement with them.
Right.
Their basic premise is all government spending, bad, bad. However, there's a whole nother – I'm just banging the mic. There's a whole bunch of other people who are not to that extreme who say, right, some government spending is okay, some is bad. The question is, how do you get there? And I think for some people, the question is what you were touching on, is the process of putting earmarks onto legislation, that, you know, things that aren't vetted through committee and all these kinds of things, mm-hmm. that it seems kind of underhanded in a way. But I think that you raised a point. I certainly haven't heard it expressed anywhere before, that essentially the representatives who are putting these earmarks on are doing what they're supposed to be doing as elected representatives, namely looking after their constituents. I have heard it argued that a lot of these earmarks are things that don't fit properly in any other spending bill, like, say, funding for the Department of Health and Human Services, for instance, that an earmark makes more sense because it's a highly right. localized project. Now, right. that's an argument. People can reasonably disagree about that. But I guess because what I'm getting to is that earmarks aren't necessarily bad. Just because right. they're earmarks. In other words, you have to look at the project based on its merits, which I suppose some people could say is true, but it should have gone through the normal budgetary process.
Well,
that's a discussion you can have.
And are there too many of them? But sort of going back to your point about and what I also made about representatives responding, I have to assume that the water and sewer improvements that were in the city of Chicago Heights and the city of Lexington, I'm assuming probably someone in the government of the Chicago Heights and Lexington came along and said, we need some help with this. You know, it wasn't like Martians came down and decided, oh, hey, let's write to our you know, this earth man's elected leader and say, hey, give this money. So, I mean, there has to have been some, you know, and water and sewer improvements, $280,000. Who knows if this is going to be properly vetted and contracted. Those are, you know, other questions. I'm just looking at the list here. I'm sort of pulling them out just as the people who are against these things pull things out. And so that's the question I'm raised. And I think there are valid points if, you know, this is you're going around the regular process and you're sort of like cramming all this all of these things into this bill so that so maybe you can get away with it, so to speak. But I think some of these things seem rather legitimate, and would they not be funded any other way? I guess that there's another question.
And a lot of those projects, especially about sewers and things, are certainly consistent with at least the spirit of the stimulus package, if not specific items within it, because it's about getting the infrastructure repaired, and it's also about putting people to work, because somebody's got to make these sewer and water repairs and things. Somebody's got to...
And these things are falling apart.
You know,
they are falling apart. We had a couple of years ago some water main break, and the water main was made in 1910.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, yeah, okay, sooner or later, this is going to bust. So that, I mean, again, that's my question, that I don't entirely understand, you know, how it became this sort of big thing, and the Republicans, you know, bashing everybody not even Republicans, the people who oppose these things bashing everybody over their heads, like, oh, this is terrible, this is awful, it's 2% of the budget.
Yeah, although I think for them, as I was saying a little bit earlier,
right,
it's not so much the percentage of the budget, but just the fact that they are things that didn't go through the normal processes. Because people who do see validity in government spending might still object to the process, even if they think that the individual projects aren't necessarily bad, if that makes any sense. That for them, it's all about the process, not specifically what's being spent, I think. But I mean, part of the Republican talking points at the moment is about how earmarks are awful and the Democrats are awful and Obama's awful because he's allowing these earmarks. And that was what the hypocrisy thing was all about, because so many of them are doing earmarks. But the latest thing is what they're saying is that government should stop spending money altogether and until the economy fixes itself. And of course, the last president who stopped spending money was Herbert Hoover. And that worked out really well.
Well, yeah, there was a very interesting article in the Post today from somebody, actually the guy who I went to at the Calp Report. This guy's name is Stephen Perlstein. He's a business columnist, not an economist, business columnist who writes for the Washington Post. And I happen to agree with this. As for Republicans, their stubborn opposition to any increase in government spending in the face of a severe downturn in the economic is the economic equivalent of bloodletting, and their determination to paint every initiative of the Obama administration with the broad brush of socialism is the kind of old-fashioned red-baiting that would make Joe McCarthy proud. He goes on, it's just not Congress, however. Key regulators have also been slow to respond to the unfolding crisis with the kind of urgency the situation demands. Now, not to leave out the Democrats, he does talk about how there was an article in the Post the other day about Washington's new power couples, and guy who was appointed to the White House liaison to the National Endowment for the Humanities, and he says, let's get this straight. We're up to our necks in the worst global economic crisis since the 1930s. The government is putting trillions of dollars of borrowed money on the line to rescue the financial system and stimulate the economy. Tens of trillions of dollars in paper wealth has vaporized. Millions of Americans are losing their jobs and their homes. Nearly all the top jobs in the Treasury Department are vacant, yet somehow the White House has found the time and the money to hire a liaison to the National Endowment for the Humanities! Exclamation point. So he's an equal opportunity, and I sort of agree with this that they're not as staffed as they should be. But there has to be the realization that government is the person left to do something, and that tax cuts in and of themselves are not going to do what's necessary. Now, I think you can fight over sort of what the spending should be.
Yeah, and that's legitimate.
But this absurd notion that it's going to be socialism is just, it is red baiting, you know, as far as I'm concerned, because they're going to have to go in, fix the stuff, and then they're going to return it to the private sector or return control. They're going to disentangle themselves, and I don't see how the government cannot be involved. We had government not being involved, and we got ourselves into this crisis.
Yeah. Yes, and I'm sure we're going to be having a lot more to say about this whole topic in the months ahead.
Yes, I think so too. I don't think there's any question about it. So, well, anyway, I believe you have another comment, though.
Yes. Also
emailed to us.
Yes, it was also on the last episode, and this is over at amrinspodcast.com. And, of course, anybody who wants to can leave a comment there or at twopolitical.com. And this is from Roger Green, who said, "So much to note. Olbermann's Plastic Ivy by Coulter, and this is a quote, "Fortunately, we have Keith Olbermann to point out that Rush Limbaugh did not accurately quote the preamble to the Constitution in his CPAC speech last weekend. I'm not sure what scam Olbermann imagined Rush was trying to put over on the American people by saying conservatives believed in the, quote, preamble to the Constitution, and then quoting from the Declaration of Independence. But Olbermann put an end to that cruel deception. These small-time opportunities to show off by correcting someone else's teeny-tiny mistakes are the lifeblood of Olbermann's MSNBC show Countdown." And Roger adds, "Teeny-tiny mistakes seems to be a fundamental error." And then he goes on, "The discussion about W's, and especially John Yoo's, abuses remind me of that great line from Frost Nixon, 'If the president does it, it's legal.'" Says, "I agree the only solution for D.C. is if it gets reabsorbed into Maryland and the population is treated as such. Yes, it was Utah that's in the potential 437-member House because it was those Mormons who were on mission out of the country that weren't counted." I'll do my comments later. Anyway, carrying on. "Actually, swine smell is a problem in North Carolina. My mom lives there. Frankly, I've never cared what people call themselves. Rock Hudson, Muhammad Ali, Cary Grant, lots of Chinese Americans changed their name for American consumption. So if Piyush Jindal wants to be Bobby, more power to him. There are enough real things to chastise him over, but his name is not one of them." And in writing, I said, Coulter also attacked Olbermann for not having a real, in quotes, Cornell degree because of the college within the university that he attended and graduated from. And, of course, I could add that I don't really care what Ann Coulter has to say about anything. But
right, yeah.
The line from...
I do have to say about her, I wonder what the portrait in her attic looks like. That's all I can say.
And I said that the line from Nixon is clearly what Bush Cheney thought, and they obviously did, because if you look at the things that they did to establish the primacy of a presidential dictatorship, what they clearly had in mind is if the president does it, it's not illegal. As for Bobby Jindal, I've heard it pronounced that way in Jindal, but I'm not sure which is actually really correct. Anyway, I couldn't possibly care less what he calls himself. My point was just that the Republicans are being hypocritical in attacking Obama for his un-American name while giving Jindal a free pass because he says what they want to hear. And that's the gist of it. I mean, as I say, I don't care what he calls himself. He could call himself late for dinner for all I care. The point is that
yes,
the Republicans are being hypocritical in attacking Barack Obama over his name and giving Bobby Jindal a free pass. That was what the point was, not what he actually calls himself.
And I would like to mention something, that the idea that D.C. will be reabsorbed into Maryland is going to happen about the same time the United States goes metric.
Fat chance, in other words.
There was a story about that in the Washington Post. Oh, considering going metric. And I'm thinking, like, when hell freezes over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really going to happen. I don't see that happening. And I don't think... let's put it this way. I think Maryland doesn't want us, and we don't want Maryland.
Yeah.
Speaking as a resident of the District of Columbia for having lived here since 1977. And so, yeah, I just don't see that as happening.
And our last comment was over at Too Political, and it was from Mark from Slap Upside the Head, who said, "Congratulations on branching off on a new site and podcast. You two have always had some of the most insightful commentary I hear about U.S. politics. Though I'm a little surprised you love Windows Vista this much. Your blog theme is a perfect pitch recreation for the Vista look and feel." And perhaps
I'm not going to hurl on that comment. But anyway,
well, I'll take,
that's the best I can do.
I'll take Mark's word for that, because I've never seen Windows Vista. I switched from PC to Mac before Vista was released, and I've never seen it, so I have no idea. But Mark's site, Slap Upside the Head, is one of my favorites. I haven't mentioned it on the Too Political podcast yet, so that's my first plug. It's at slapupsidethehead.com. It's one word, Slap Upside the Head. And his subtitle is "Fighting Bigotry the Gayest Way I Know How." And he picks up news items mostly from Canada, but also from other parts of the world, and points out hypocrisy and silliness and badness and all kinds of things. But he does it in a way that's more lighthearted and less, I don't know, polemical than most bloggers, including me, can seem to manage. So I highly recommend checking it out. But that's all the feedback from the last episode. And of course, you can always leave feedback at the original site or at twopolitical.com. That's the number two, political, one word, .com. You can also send an email to me, Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at Amaranth. You can do that too, but twopolitical.com. Forgetting which podcast I'm doing.
Which podcast? At least you got the name of the site right.
Yes, I didn't say the other one. I'm not going to say because I don't want to confuse anybody.
Podcast.com.
Oh, no, you're going to confuse everybody. They're all going to go to the wrong site now. You know that.
No, because we'll have links because our listeners are smarter than you are.
That's probably true.
I'm sorry. That's
certainly true. You can also send Jason an email at jason@twopolitical.com. And where is your blog?
My blog is at Jason's View from. See, now it's contagious. I'm going to blame you. I've reached my senility even before. It's just the two brain cells that I have. Okay, here it is. See, I'm still excited about the Fleetwood Mac concert. That's so. Jason's View from dc.blogspot.com. And I'm going to add this quick little thing because I think this is sort of interesting. When we first saw them 31 years ago,
Fleetwood Mac, you're talking
we paid
about.
Fleetwood Mac. We paid $8 for lawn seats at Alpine Valley. Remember that was like in bumfuck Wisconsin. Oh, I'm sorry. All the people who love Alpine Valley, West Allis or wherever East Troy. I'm sorry. So that must mean there's a West Troy and a North Troy or a Troy. Anyway, my ticket last night was around $150. Actually, the service and handling fee was more than we paid to sit on the lawn. In fact, $8, if you went to most outdoor concert sites, you couldn't pay for parking for that amount of money. Now, granted, it was 31 years ago, but my goodness. Anyway, that's sort of my end comment.
I didn't remember how much we paid, but I suspect that being 31 years ago, that even $8 was probably a bit, we thought to ourselves, well, okay, we'll spend that much. It's a lot, but we'll spend it.
No, I think we probably thought $8 was pretty cheap.
Yeah, but so then the reason
I know that is because I still have the ticket.
Yeah, well, I keep most of mine. I might even have that one too. I don't know. I'd have to look.
So, Well, anyway, that's sort of my interesting little, my opening and closing pieces of trivia. So, hey, you know. Learn something new every day here.
Indeed. And this program is all about education, isn't it?
I know. It's we're all about the children. You know, how can we help the children?
Remember the children.
Yes, and boy, I've just alienated all sorts of groups.
I know. We'll have about two or three listeners left now. Thanks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, you know, I try. Hey, I always like to be helpful. You should know that about me. Anyway,
you only offend the ones you love.
I know. Anyway, that's it from Jason's end in Washington, D.C. Back to Arthur in
Auckland, New Zealand. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.